Hello and a very warm welcome. I'm Gemma and it's my absolute pleasure to welcome you to the fifth in our Keep Calm series. So far, we've got creative, inspired, resilient, and last time we got positive. This series was designed to pivot, reframe, and embrace the opportunities we have together. And our focus at the Marketing Society has been threefold in these interesting times. It's about our well-being, keeping our members, you, inspired and motivated, and importantly, staying connected. And hopefully you'll feel that our virtual series has been doing just that. We've had some incredible feedback, and hopefully some of you would have caught yesterday's LinkedIn session, which was full of practical tips delivered by our team in New York. It was absolutely brilliant, and it's recorded just like all the others. And what it showed me is I have a lot of work to do on my LinkedIn profile. So I think it's fair to say our way of life has been a bit disrupted, but what I think is also fair to say is it's shown how when things like this happen, when we come together, that's when we're stronger. And we absolutely believe that at the Marketing Society. And it's interesting that we chose the Brave to Get Together agenda, and it really feels like it's never been so relevant. So on to today, we are now Keep Calm and Pause. See what I did there? I paused. With the brilliant Rob Poynton. You may have seen him at our Bravest conference. He did a standout performance and got us all really thinking about reframing time and taking time out as well, and the importance of pausing. He is a coach and creative business thinker. He's an author of three books, and his most recent, surprise, surprise, it's called Do Pause, a book about our relationship with time. When he's not in lockdown in Oxford, and this is what I absolutely love, he hangs out in Spain in a solar-powered grid house in central Spain, where he hosts retreats and events. So hoping we're going to come to you next there, Rob. That will be an interesting once we're all out of this situation. Now, we mentioned the bag of crisps. Do you have them? I have mine at the ready. Walkers, don't judge me. Everyone has different tastes. My son tried to take these just before, so I only just got them back. But we've got our bag of crisps. Rob's going to get interactive. I know this is going to be an uplifting and inspiring session. So without further ado, Rob Poynton, the floor's all yours. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Gemma. Yeah, this book I wrote last year. And it's attracting a lot of attention now, as I'm sure you'd imagine. In this, what's being called by many people now, big pause. And I spoke about that, as Gemma said, at the marketing conference, the Marketing Society conference in November. And there's quite a lot to think about there deeply in terms of how we relate to time and how do we get the most out of it. Not just how do we get the most out of it in terms of being productive, but how do we actually appreciate and get more from our time in a broader sense? Sink into it, enjoy it. I use it creatively. So there's a lot to think about here. But it strikes me that right now, for most of us some weeks into this, for me, I had a double thing. I had to go up to the hospital, not because I got COVID, but because I had a kidney stone in the middle of this. I had a kind of period of complete lockdown. So we're some way into it. And I think at this point, what I'd like to focus on today is kind of being really practical and thinking about things we can do to create kind of little pauses in this new strange existence. So to get us going, I'm kind of interested in just knowing a little bit from you about how you're feeling right now about this pause. I think I was talking to somebody this morning, who says they've never been busier. Other people might be confused or just getting a bit lost. So it'd be good for me to get a sense of kind of where you're at. So if you've any immediate thoughts about how you're feeling right now in terms of your relationship to this big pause. Are you feeling pressured, stressed, relaxed, cool? Are you learning to love it? So what's going on there for any of you? If you just pop anything in the chat window, that'd be great. And you can choose to everyone. Okay, so Amanda, all of those things. Yeah, I think that's a very common experience actually, which is that it changes a lot. Somebody, Chris, bored. Yeah, I'm beginning to feel that myself. But this fact that it changes and we can't do the things perplexed and blended we've got, getting a bit bored with it all, up and down, mixed feelings, trying to make the most of it. So good. Okay. Planning. Okay. So from Mark, so uncertain for the future, Struggling with a lack of ability to plan. Somebody else getting into rhythm and getting good things done. So quite a diversity. I think it's fair to say that it's not straightforward. It's asking different things of us. One of the things I've been struck by is how busy I have felt actually in this time. And I think that's an experience many people are having. So I think what I'm going to be interested in exploring with you today is finding little things to do. So one of the curious things about pause that got me interested in the first place is it's not obvious how long a pause is, in the sense that it might be a few seconds. I might just stop here now, just to breathe and collect my thoughts. That might be a pause. Or you know, I'm here in a university city where for hundreds of years, probably people have been taking whole years off, called sabbaticals, where they're freed of their normal responsibilities. So this sense that it's kind of operates on many different levels, and that's something we'll come back to. A lovely last comment there from Alistair. So appreciating the small things is something I think is part of the gift of this time, however difficult and complex it is, that it gives us the opportunity to appreciate small things, each other. I posted on Instagram the other day yet another picture of flowers when I was out on my daily walk. And I was wondering, and it was the question I put alongside the picture, is this the most photographed and appreciated spring ever? And I don't know where you all are. I'm assuming you're in the Northern Hemisphere. For those of you in the Southern Hemisphere, different story. But it's been an amazing spring here in Oxford. So, and I noticed it more. And noticed more things about it, actually, as we go on our walks. I noticed the scents and the smells and the silence, as well as the birdsong and the bees and the flowers. So something there that perhaps I wouldn't have done otherwise. Anyway, so what I want you to do is help me. We're going to play pause bingo. Now, I don't know how well you can see this, but what I've done in the true spirit of Blue Peter, here's one I prepared earlier. Each of these post-it notes represents a different little pause, a little thing that you might do to incorporate into your day, to create a little bit of space for yourself, or a little bit of reflection, or a little bit of appreciation. So I'm going to use the chat window again for this. It's going to be kind of quick fire. If you can see them clearly, and there's one that takes your interest, you know, the one with the toothbrush, you might say, that's the heading there is brush like a Zen master. You can just write down that one, and I'll take the first one that comes and we'll talk about that. And then we'll do it again once I finish talking about that. So you get lots of chances to request one, and we'll see if we get through them all. If you can't see them clearly enough, you can just say the green one, three across, or green three. Okay, let something wait. So Claire Smith, let something wait. Right, so that's this one here. So I did let something wait, right? There we go, we'll talk about that for a minute. All right, stick it on my forehead. No, I won't do that. The idea of letting something wait is really, if you look at the personal productivity literature, people often say, and there's good sense in it, that you should start your day or do first the thing which you least want to do. Make the call that's a difficult one, or do the boring bit of accounting, or whatever it is. And there's virtue in that. But this one came to me when I found myself constantly putting off the things that were for me. And I think in this kind of period of working at home where boundaries are blurred and the normal structures have been taken away from us, I found myself never getting to my run or my meditation or whatever it was. And I don't run very far. I run for about 10 minutes. So it wasn't like a big ask, but I kept not doing it. And then it was dark and stuff like that. So this idea of letting something wait is to turn the normal received wisdom on its head and to do the thing that's for you, the thing that's going to give you a little space, a little piece of whatever it is you're looking for, to do that first. And just allow yourself to do that. So other suggestions coming in. I'm gonna go again back to you. So who's fastest and first? We'll park this one over here for now. Well, let's let something wait. The beardy guy, by the way, somebody mentioned. So beardy guy method. Great. Okay, that's Charles Darwin. That's my rendition of Charles Darwin. So this is the thing. Charles Darwin and his neighbour, actually, Sir John Lubbock, also a very high-achieving man from the 19th century. Sir John Lubbock was a parliamentarian and, I suppose, what we call today a civil rights campaigner. And both Darwin and Lubbock, in different forms, had a very particular way of working, of organising what Cal Newport, for example, might call these days their deep work. And so Darwin would divide his day up into chunks of solid concentration, where he would work on either his barnacle collection, which was a work he did over many decades, actually, or on his writing. And he would concentrate normally for about between an hour or 2 hours a day, and then he would go out in his park for a walk. So he had in his estate, he had a little area where he had a circular path, and he'd walk around that. So he'd then he'd do domestic things, go to his greenhouses. And so the idea of the Darwin-Lubbock method, and this was something it's a silly name on purpose that I invented for myself when I was writing the book, was to separate the deep periods of concentrated work from the itsy-bitsy interruptions that are so common these days. So in a way, it's a way of corralling and focusing your attention and then getting time back for yourself by allowing yourself then to do something else. So literally what I did with the book is I had 90 minutes, I'd set a timer, I would turn off all electronic media, turn off the phone and write for 90 minutes or think for 90 minutes. And then once I'd done that, I would stop when the timer came, so I wasn't allowed to keep going, even if I was on a roll. And then I'd do something normally quite different. I'd go outside or go for a short walk. So this one's kind of about focusing your work and then creating space around it. Maybe particularly important if you're at home. Okay, so I'm just looking at what pops up. Let's see, from Hardeep. Okay, so create a commute. Create a commute, that's this one here. So I owe this one to two great friends of mine, Nick Parker and James Wilson. So Nick Parker, he started working from his shed, which is in his garden, a couple of years ago now. So this is a pre-COVID home working or working from home story. And so instead of having to go from the outskirts of London into London on a daily commute to the office, he had to walk down the garden to the shed. And so what Nick decided to do was to give himself back the time that he normally would have spent commuting. So obviously he doesn't have a very long garden, so it wasn't very long, but his commute would take him about 45 minutes. And so he took that 45 minutes to allow himself to read a book, not a paper or a presentation or a slide deck, but to read a book or something that was of interest to him. So he took back the time from the commute, presumably because that's what he would do on the commute when he commuted. So lots of us now working from home, you could take that idea. And indeed, James has. And James has taken it in quite a different direction. So he also has a shed at the end of his garden in Lewisham. And in the shed, he has a turbo trainer. So what James does is James goes down to the end of the garden, into the shed, gets on his turbo trainer and cycles to work. And what he's doing is in his mind, he's on the bike and he's imagining, like a meditation almost, he's imagining the route he would take from his home in Lewisham to the office. Now, he changed jobs recently, just before lockdown, actually, and he previously worked in Whitehall. Now he works in Canary Wharf. And so he told me this fabulous story about that. There he is in his shed, on his bike, and he's going to the wrong office. So he finds himself two-thirds of the way to Whitehall when his office is in Canary Wharf. But the funny thing is he can't just, in his mind, suddenly leap and travel instantly and start again. In his mind, he has to cycle all the way back home again, back to Lewisham, and then set off to Canary Wharf, and so he arrived late. And all this time, he's just been on the turbo trainer in the garden. So a very funny story. But perhaps create a little bit of daylight between the start of work, or perhaps also at the end of work as well, even if you're not actually physically moving. So that's that one. Let's see, who's next? Let's shout out anybody. If I haven't got to yours yet, you want to say it again, pop it in the chat window, or if there's one that suddenly takes your fancy. Your Song. Okay, that's from Kevin Harrington. So Your Song. Where's that one gone? Down there. There we go. Yeah. So this is really about the use of props and of things that have a duration, a length of time, and using that to ring fence or create time for yourself. So this one is very simple. Choose a song, one that is meaningful and interesting and one you love, perhaps, or like, and just get that song and get it on your iPod or the stereo or whatever. Ideally, if you can get headphones so nobody's going to interrupt you, and just listen to it. Listen to it from the beginning to the end. So if you can listen into it, listen beyond it, listen to bits of the music you've never heard before, follow the drums or the trying to pick out the bass line, or just let it wash over you. And if you've got headphones on, kind of really super easy for that short period of time to just ignore everything else and just allow yourself to kind of be in the song, you know. You can choose Tubular Bells, then you get 23 minutes or something, but that's probably a bit unrealistic. So that's Your Song. What have we got now? I'm going to go back to Body Scan. Body Scan. That one's there, yeah. Body Scan. Here we go. So the Body Scan idea is something to do last thing or first thing. So often with trying to create time or space for yourself, triggers are really useful. In other words, things that remind you to do it. And so this is about first thing in the morning, literally while you're lying in bed, or last thing at night when you lie down again just before you go to sleep, to just in your mind do a scan from the tips of your toes, bring your attention up and just feel how you're feeling up through your legs, your body, your chest, shoulders, arms, head, right to the top of your head, or the other way around, start at the top and work down. And just to notice how you're feeling, what your body is telling you, what it's sensing. It might be quite different if you do that last thing at night, your body sort of speaking about the day you've had, or first thing in the morning when you're thinking of the day to come. So just that idea of scanning your own body, and you can do that in a matter of seconds. So that's Body Scan. Put that there. Let Something Slide from Sarah Kilpatrick. Yeah, that one I'm quite pleased with. That's this one. So Letting Something Slide. So there's been a lot of talk about how, you know, when Shakespeare found himself in lockdown for the plague, he went off and wrote King Lear. And there's a feeling many of us have had, I think, about in this time, as well as doing the homeschooling and keeping your heart and soul together and working, learning to work from home and dealing with all the other 1,001 things, that somehow there's an expectation that we're also going to write that novel or clear out the basement or learn to code. And that's just kind of unrealistic and impossible. So this is really an invitation to let go, first of the idea of doing everything perfectly, to let go perhaps of the idea of doing everything at all, and to choose something each day to let it slide. So I'm at home with my, you know, children, who are quite grown up now, they're all adults, but, you know, I found myself with this expectation that we should cook 2 proper meals a day. Well, why not? Why not just let one of them slide and just make toast or order pizza? Or why not bother to dress one day and just do your day's work in your pajamas? And why not? So the idea of letting something slide is to give yourself that permission to not be perfect and to very consciously kind of go, I'm not going to do that. There'll be things at work that we normally would do that probably aren't relevant or needed or necessary anymore. So maybe get up one of those slide as well. It doesn't just have to be about kind of home habits. So put him over there. All right, how are we doing? Very well. Okay, any more for any more? I've got a couple to go back to. Anybody, let's give someone else a chance. Let's take a bit of a drink. Something a friend of mine, Phillida Hancock, taught me is that if you're giving a speech, I did this in the middle of the talk to the Marketing Society, is if you go and have a drink of water, people will always allow you to have a little break, even in the middle of a sentence, actually. All right, so we're going to go to the weights guy. Lovely, that's this one. Yeah, she says probably too small for you to read. It says, get physical. So one of the things I found in writing the book, when I spoke to lots of people who have a very interesting perspective on pausing. So I spoke to Zen monks and artists and actors and film directors and scientists and poets and all sorts of people, dancers. And it was interesting how often the pause was introduced or brought about by doing something physical. So the idea of getting physical, I mean, one very simple way to do that would be to get up and go for a short walk, even if it's around the room. But you can get physical without actually even leaving your desk. So one of the things I think is really important is how you are on the ground. And so even if you're sitting at a desk, is to just feel your feet on the ground. I have a habit of actually not resting my feet properly on the ground. I'm kind of on tiptoes the whole time. That makes me feel agitated and nervous. So I can be sitting at my desk and then just bring my attention to my feet and use my body by putting my feet evenly, smoothly, firmly on the ground and just feeling the ground beneath them. That can help me to kind of just calm and pause. Or if that one doesn't work for you, you might just become conscious or aware of how are you holding yourself. So what position are you in? You don't have to try and change it, but just notice where your arms and legs are. If you're leaning back, if your pelvis is rotated forwards or backwards. Notice if you're holding tension perhaps in your jaw or your shoulders. And if you are, maybe you might just want to, having noticed that, just kind of let it go. So the idea here is that your body is your friend, and by bringing your attention into your physical body, that helps to create a sense of pause and space. Right, what we got now? Journal. Okay, journal just popped up. That one's here. I mean, this is a really, really familiar one, which is the idea of kind of writing to yourself or for yourself. I say it's familiar because there's a whole body of work around what's sometimes called daily pages for creative people, writers in particular, just writing without any particular purpose, writing in an unstructured way. And the invitation here is to write by hand, to let your hand still your mind, as it were. And to do that by not worrying about what you should write, to just take a period of a few minutes. You might choose in advance, or you might just do it until you feel you're done. And to just write. But the discipline is to keep writing. And you can write nonsense, or you can write, I don't know what to write. I think it's really useful in this context to be very loose about it, very gentle on yourself, and to just let your hand discover what it wants to say. And people who've done this over a period often find that it turns out that the things that you say are quite insightful, that by freeing up the conscious, deliberative part of your mind and just allowing, if you like, your unconscious to speak through your hand, you sometimes find interesting insights emerging. And of course, it's private, so nobody ever knows. So it's simply about doing that and developing a regular habit for that, which might be at a particular kind of time of day. So that journaling. Tea time. Tea time, tea time or coffee, if that's your thing. This is from Nicola Young. This is very similar to the one about music, but perhaps in a way easier to do because we all tend to drink tea and coffee anyway. And I borrowed this from a friend of mine, Edward S.B. Brown, who is a Zen monk and a cooking author. And he does what he calls the coffee meditation. And so the idea is to make yourself a cup of tea or coffee and then just to devote yourself to it. Do not use it to accompany other things, but first to, as you have your cup or mug, to hold it, to feel the warmth, to actually smell the aroma as it wafts up to you. And as you take a first sip, to really pay close attention to the taste on the lips and the tongue and the feel in the mouth, and as you swallow. And then the aftertaste. I often find myself drinking cups of coffee without really tasting them at all because I'm doing something else. So this is another one of those kind of measured chunks of time where you just allow yourself for that time to just do that, sitting, standing at your desk. And if people come to you and ask for something, you say, I'll do that in a moment, or I'll talk to you when I finish my tea. And the same, don't be scrolling through your phone or checking your emails while you're doing it. Just dedicate yourself to the tea and allow the tea or the coffee to give back to you what it has to give. What else we got? Listen out. I don't think we've done that one, have we? Oh, this is a great one. This is a really good one for now, for lockdown. This could be kind of a lockdown thing. So this I got from Gina Barnett, who is the coach who works with the TED main stage speakers. So she's has background in theatre. She's a hard-bitten New Yorker. And we could do this right now, actually. So wherever you are, if you just start to pay attention, obviously you'll be hearing my voice, but to pay attention to the other sounds around you. So if you can open up and extend your listening to hear what else is in the room or maybe in the next room. I'll shut up in a minute and you can kind of try this more properly. And then once you've got that, can you hear maybe music or the washing machine or somebody speaking? And then beyond that, can you hear, if you have a window open, can you hear something outside? Is there a distant single passing car? So can you expand your range of hearing further out? And Gina taught this to us as a device to use just before you go on stage, actually, to still and calm yourself before speaking. But I think it's really useful in this. And the reason I think it's particularly pertinent at the moment is because the quiet is palpable in many places. I'm in Oxford and the Ring Road is normally a perpetual accompaniment to being here, and it's just gone. And so you can hear the silence, and in the silence, the bird song and the bees and the conversations in the street and stuff like that. So that's about listening out. We're doing very well here. What have we got here now? Any more for any more? Let me go back and see if I've missed any. Nope. Any new ones? If not, I'll just pick one. Okay. Probably got time for a couple more. Let's see. This one I can do really quickly. It's about thresholds. Today list, we've got that from Rebecca. We'll come back to that in a second. So thresholds, this is about just pausing for a moment and using the threshold to trigger that. So when you enter or leave a room, but of course these days we're not going to very many places, but that doesn't mean thresholds don't exist. So think of this, the threshold that you're probably on now is that screen you get before you click onto a Zoom call. And to just maybe count to 10 or 3 or maybe even 1 before you do that, to just take a moment and notice how are you entering this metaphorical room and how are you feeling. So that can help you to enter in a different spirit. So that's what thresholds is about. And then let's see, what was the one I was to go back to? Today list. Oh, this is. I only learned this recently since I wrote the book, actually. This is not in the book. I got this from Katie Elliott, another friend. And this is really cool. So this is about at the end of, ideally the night before, so this would be last night, you write yourself a list of the things that you want to do today. And you have to make that realistic, not a cloud cuckoo land, endless laundry list, but what would make you feel good to have done today? And you write that list either the night before or first thing in the morning. And that's called your today list, not your to-do list. And you have to be disciplined about this. So once you've got that today list, then you set about doing those things. And once you've done the list, you're not allowed to add, once you've written the list, you're not allowed to add anything else to it. And if you finish everything, then you're done. You can't go, oh great, I'll now use that extra time to do the things and get ahead. No, that time comes back to you. This is a finite, not an infinite list. And that's the trouble with a to-do list, tends to be infinite. The other thing about a today list is it helps you to concentrate on the things you can actually do in one day. So if you're familiar with David Allen's work around getting things done, that idea of breaking things down into the manageable chunks that you can actually complete, and then allowing yourselves to complete them. Now, of course, not always that straightforward because things occur during the day that we have to deal with. So you have to be a little bit flexible around firefighting, but you have to be disciplined and rigorous. And if there is something important that you really do have to deal with that comes up during the day that goes onto this list, you cross something else off. So it's about finding a list with an end, not a list that goes on forever. Right. How are we doing? I think we've got 3 left. So somebody asked about this one a few ways back. This actually says very deliberately, start small.
So it's not just start, it's starting small. So
one of the things I've noticed as I kind of talk about pause, sometimes people think, well, if I'm going to pause, I've got to have a lot of time to do it. If I can't take an hour off or a day off, or I think sometimes people imagine I'm suggesting you go on a 2-week silent retreat. And for some people, that might be fabulous. But most of the time, that's not possible, nor is it necessary. And I think one of the most amazing things about pause is how, by introducing these tiny little interregnums, the time has depth to it. And so a few minutes or a few seconds can change what comes next and change in some ways what comes before, because pausing can also allow you to digest and make sense of things. So this is really an encouragement to sort of aim low and take it easy and be kind to yourself and to understand that it's a bit like yeast. Pause, I think, is like yeast. You need dough and you need yeast to make bread. Sorry, you need flour and you need yeast to make the dough. You don't need very much yeast, but it makes an awful lot of difference. So the pause is leaven or lighten your life. So just give yourself the chance to start with something really small, maybe something that we've mentioned already or something that you might invent for yourself or a friend might suggest to you. Okay, draw or doodle. We can dispatch this one quite quickly. That's the same as journaling, but except drawing. So take a few minutes, get a notebook, draw something obvious and in front of you. Don't worry about being artistic. Don't compose a masterpiece. Just draw what's on your desk. Draw your phone. Draw anything. And if drawing like that it makes you nervous, which it does for some people, many of us haven't drawn since school, perhaps, then just doodle. And if all of that makes you nervous, you can always just screw it up and throw it away, just to make sure you're not trying to produce a great result. You're just having that time interacting in a different way, both with your own body and looking in a different way, and also just using a skill that many of us have kind of abandoned. And it doesn't matter how short you do that. So that's drawing or doodling. And then last but not least, brush like a Zen master. Yeah, my youngest son was asking about this one this morning. There's a saying in Zen, which is, when you chop wood, chop wood. When you carry water, carry water. And what that's about is about being wholly present to just doing the thing you're doing when you're doing it and not be dispersed or scattered. And again, the idea of brushing your teeth, which we all do already, but not doing so anxiously, not doing so aggressively, not doing so, I often find myself, the tension I have in my body, I'm actually brushing really hard, which is neither good for the teeth nor the gums either. So actually just taking those few minutes of brushing teeth as another little, little moment for yourself, to not think about anything in particular. So great. So now somebody has very perceptively spotted that we haven't done this one, which Stevens describes as a pink jukebox. Actually, I'll give you a real one, actually. It's a bot. It's a Gary Hirsch hand-drawn pause bot, like that. So this is actually drawn on a domino. That's domino. And there's a lovely story behind this. So Gary is a business partner of mine. We started an improv-based business together, and this is actually it. This is another Gary Hirsch illustration. This is the logo for On Your Feet. And we had this idea about having a kind of imaginary robot that followed you around and issued you kind of ridiculous compliments, like, you look great today. It's a kind of confidence building thing. And Gary decided to stop it being imaginary and to make it real. And he found these dominoes, like I say, literally, this is a kind of outsized domino. And he started to draw these little creatures by hand on these dominoes. He just liked the surface. And I kid you not, this one here, this is quite an old one, actually. Do you see that? Out. There we are. So that says on it, it has a number. It's 20,780. So this is the 20,780th one of these that Gary's drawn. And he's now over 54,000. So what I've asked him to do, the way these normally work is, he called them joy bots originally, and he's done a lot of great work with children in hospitals where you give them as a kind of talisman, as a reminder, as a friend, as an anchor, to bring you joy or hope or courage. And so I've asked him to make some which will remind you to pause, that you can carry them around and just hold them, and they'll
kind of whisper in your ear, you know, you might want to take a little break, or maybe it's time to listen to your song, or to focus on a cup of tea. And so if you actually want one of these physically, you could make them yourselves. The instructions to do so are on Gary's website, which is botjoy.com. But if you actually want a real one, Gary's made them. They're for sale on his website, and the link to that, if you should want one, it'll be in the notes that you'll get. Linda will put it in the chat window at the end. So now we come to the last one, which is the bonus one, which is this one. So I'm hoping you've all got your crisps. Now, I say crisps, but really we're going to work with just one. So this is another one I've borrowed from Ed Brown, my Zen monk friends, and it's a challenge actually. And the challenge is, can you just eat one potato crisp or potato chip if you're in the US? I've got a glass of water here because I think I might need it. So I'm going to give you all a few seconds to you can open your bag if you're still in your bag. You may have been munching through the whole way through this, so this may not work. But anyway, wherever you're at, get one crisp out. Choose just one that you like the look of. And what we're going to do is I'm going to invite you to plate it up if you've got a plate to hand, or just hold it. And we're just going to eat this one, at least. You know, that's the aim. I defy you to actually do this. But I want you to pay real attention to it. So we're going to eat this thing. So actually look at it. When was the last time, if ever, that you've actually looked at a potato crisp? It's actually a remarkable thing. I have to take my glasses off to look at it properly. But as I look at this, mine's obviously got a skin on thing, and it's got this extraordinary kind of shape. And this sort of, I don't know how to describe it, this kind of, the surface, all these sort of bubbles. I'm going to turn it over and have a look at it. And then a more toasted bit down this end, and some black marks. As you look at it, here's one way to think about this. Is imagine you were going to put this crisp back in the packet, and you have to find this one again. So you've got to look at it closely enough that you would recognize this crisp if you saw it. So then we move on to it's about a multi-sensory exercise, right? We'll move on to another sense. So smell it. How close do you have to get before you get a sense of the aroma? And you may know what flavor it is, but does the smell actually correspond to that flavor? That'd be funny, actually. I wonder if we've got any crisp marketers in the audience. This will be a different kind of different kind of exercise for them. So now you get to hold it. And in a minute, because we want to get to the full sound glory of this. So you're all on mute at the moment. But when I invite you to eat them, and you can nibble a bit off the corner or pop it all in at once and crunch away, I thought it'd be fabulous if we could hear the glory of however many people we are eating a single potato crisp. So I'm going to ask Linda, can you just confirm to me, Linda, on the chat that you're going to take everybody off mute? We'll see how we go. I'm debating whether to, I think I might take one bite and then, okay, right. So everybody ready? What I want you to do is you pop it into your mouth, but to hear the sound as well as you crunch it, but also to feel the texture on your lips and your tongue, and to notice what's happening in your mouth, to really again pay attention to that, and eat it as slowly as you feel so minded. All right, then, off we go. I've lightly salted, I think, is what this one is. That was nice. Now I'm going to have to trust you to not tuck in to the rest of the packet now. Any comments or observations about how that was to do? Pop them in the chat if you're done with your crisp or chip. Oh, still munching away, maybe. Presumably that's not how you eat potato crisps normally. I'm terrible with them. I just sort of shovel them in the whole time, and as if they're kind of going out of fashion, really. So it's a very good discipline for me. What's this got to do with pause? Well, the same as the others. You could savour any item of food, actually. All right. So I'm going to forge on. People only heard me. Well, never mind. I'm curious about the experience. Anybody got anything to say about the experience, either of taste or looking at a potato crisp? Let's just wait for a moment, see if anybody's got anything to say about that before we go on. Oh, the anticipation was better than you eat. Oh, that's really interesting, isn't it? Setting off as tooth brushing, I know what you mean. Get stuck in your teeth, don't I? I think it's quite interesting, the role of anticipation in food, actually, and chefs talk about that. So anyway, you might take that to a mealtime as well, the idea of actually taking a moment to appreciate food and enjoy that anticipation before you kind of, before you plow in. Anyway, well, thank you for indulging me in that way. I just want to go on now. We're going to kind of put my glasses back on. Go on a little bit to think about a few design tools as well. So I'm going to talk about if these pauses here are things you could do immediately called bite size, if you'll pardon the pun. There are some other things I'm just going to quickly kind of mention that I think are useful to think about. So this is an idea I borrowed from Stuart Brand, the idea that that time works in this kind of layered way, that every different domain of human activity has, or even in the natural world as well, has a different sort of natural speed, if you will. So at the top, you know, things like, you know, tech or fashion, and then, you know, down to sort of, you know, business and commerce, law, and then infrastructure. And then if you go into the biology of the earth, that kind of changes more slowly. And at the very bottom, of course, geology, which changes only over hundreds of millions of years. So, but anyway, this idea that pause as well exists in those different layers. And so pause isn't necessarily short, though it can be, but it could operate over longer periods. And so if you're thinking about not just the daily habits of pausing, but where might you want to introduce into your life a bigger space for reflection, a retreat of some kind or a different kind of activity, not so much a holiday, but a disconnection. And so this kind of provides you a map. And in the book, I talk about the habits, which are mostly these kinds of things. Designing in a pause. So I talk about a colleague who came from California. He comes from California once a year to spend 3 or 4 days in Spain in a reading retreat that I organized. So this idea that you can design that in, Bill Gates with his Think Weeks once every 2 years. And then to pose the question over longer periods, how can you perhaps through these first two weave a different relationship with time into the sort of the culture of your work or the culture of your business or the culture of your brand. So just to understand that pause isn't just about moments, that it can help to think of all these different levels, and it can help to think where, at which level might it be useful for you to think about where you want to put in a pause. So this idea of weaving your own pattern of pause across these different levels. So something to think about. In a slightly more concrete way, we all use calendars. Calendars are basically a line of time chopped into chunks. It doesn't really matter if they're on paper or on electronic media. That's what they all kind of do. And there's a lovely story about a musician, Amanda Palmer, musician, performer, very interesting, creative person. And when she had a baby, she wasn't able to, in the last months of the pregnancy and when the baby was very small, she wasn't able to do what she regarded as her work, which was to perform, be on stage, to tour, to record. And that wasn't possible when she was a nursing mother. And she kind of found herself resenting this. And so she borrowed an idea from another musician, Henry Rollins, who had this idea of what he called inhale years. So time
in his case, a whole year, set aside to absorb new influences and impulses and explore and not have to worry about things. I guess you can do that for a year if you're a famous musician. And then he'd alternate those with exhale years where he'd tour and work very hard in a very concentrated way. So this idea of recategorizing time, finding different kinds of time. And a friend of mine, Justin Wise, who's an executive coach, he took this into his own work and classified for himself inhale time and exhale time. So inhale time is study, reading, walking. It might still be work, but it's inhaling. It's of a different kind. And for him, exhale work is working with clients, finding clients, and doing the running, otherwise sort of everyday running of the business. And so by having these two categories, he could, and he used Google calendars to use different colors. So at a glance, he could see how his week or his month or even his year looked. So without going into too much detail about that, just the idea of, could you create a different classification of time, different qualities of time? And inhale, exhale is just one example. You could look at, where am I doing, where is my time basically thinking and writing? So where is it head time? Where is the space for the hand when I'm doing practical things, whether it's cooking or photography or making something or running? And where is the time for the heart, for the relationships, for building new relationships, meeting new people, having joyful experiences? So again, just filters you could put over a calendar to get away from just thinking of organizing your time as a sort of simple list of tasks, and to think of it more as, how do I organize my time so much as how do I compose a life? So that's one more. And then the last one, this I nicked from Adam Morgan at Eat Big Fish. So this notation, this idea of speed and space. So this we call the scanner in this application. And the idea is that, just think of it this way. If you think of the how time feels to you, and I'm going to give you just a binary notation. So a one represents time that feels fast and intense. So Adam calls that speed. And the zero represents experiences which feel spacious. So pauses would be of that kind. So the instructions here, the way to work with this is to take it lightly. This is a qualitative tool, not a quantitative one. You're not mapping precise periods of time. But the instructions are simply choose a period of time. So it could be a period of time in the past to analyze it, or it could be a period of time in the future that's yet to come and you're thinking about how you'd like it to be. It could be a short period or long period. It could be a year, it could be a day, a month, a week, anything in between. So you choose that period of time. Don't take it too seriously. Don't think about it too much. Map how it feels. I'll come to that again in a moment. So map how it feels to you. Okay. So this is about the experience of that time or how you would like it to feel if it's in the future. And then think about where and how a pause or pauses might fit. So what's the relationship between the ones and the zeros? So just to give you a work example, for me right now, I find it hard to think about any long periods of time. So I've used this on my day in lockdown. And actually what I've done, I've mapped just this noticing the days where I've felt a bit more miserable, where things haven't worked quite so well for me. And what I notice is, fun enough, lots of sort of, because there's no firm start to the day, there's no punctuation point, you know, a sort of coffee and then a chat and a kind of taking a while to get going, and then feeling I was kind of under pressure and couldn't really break as much as I'd like to in the middle of the day, and then it keeps going on into the evening and feeling a bit dissatisfied. And so just, I'm more interested here in the shape than the quantity of ones and zeros. And I should say, it's not like one of these is each half hour. So that might be, you know, an hour and a half, and that might be 4 hours. I don't know, but it's to do with how it feels. And then I noticed that on the days when I felt better, what was happening was can't start the day without a coffee. So I had my little kind of coffee with my wife. But then I'd sort of hit the ground running. I'd get going into something important quickly, and then feel great about it and get stuff done so that I could then take time for myself to run or to sit in meditation kind of sooner and feel that I had time in the middle of the day, which for our family works well. And then this little burst here is not very long, but actually really productive and effective. And then feel that I have a long evening. So three things you might think about to work with in terms of designing your pauses. And just two kind of last notes, really, just to say that this time is both a shock and a gift. And a lot's been written about this already. But I think that it is a chance to rethink our priorities, both individually for ourselves and for our brands and businesses. So this idea that people are finding a new rhythm, they're finding there are things that they were feeling were necessary, which perhaps weren't. So just in this time to ask yourself, what matters most? What do you really miss that you would want back? But what have you left behind that you would quite like to leave behind? And to use that for yourself and to cherish that. There's a really neat thing you can do here. There's a wonderful website called the futureme.org. So futureme, all in one word, .org. Where you can write yourself a letter that will be an email in this case, that will be sent to you at some point in the future that you define. So you can get it to be sent to you in 3 months or 6 months or a year or actually longer. So I guess what I'm suggesting is, you know, in this interregnum, in this space, notice what's working or what's become clear for you and then set up a reminder for your future self. Because I think the pull of the everyday and the inertia of things will hit us very hard as things change yet again. I think in the spirit of this theme of bravery, I think there's also a bigger opportunity here for brands, which is that essentially, rather than thinking of how do we recover or how do we get back lost business, I think that's difficult enough, but I also think that that's not brave enough. I think that the opportunity here is to transform much more deeply, not just our brands and our business, but kind of how do we think about the economy as a whole? How do we think about society? And if marketers are in the business of creating desire, there's a really simple question, which is, what are we creating desire for? And can we create desire for more fulfilling, deeper, bolder things than just kind of more stuff? Have we been guilty of just propagating more and more of the stuff we know? And is there an opportunity here to actually really look ourselves in the eye and say, what's our contribution going to be as an industry to creating a more kind of meaningful, regenerative, vibrant, lively kind of a future that goes beyond the narrow definitions of prosperity as just being economic? And I think this time is giving us some clues and providing us with an opportunity to think about what that might be. So I'm just going to end by reading a little bit of the book because I think it does require bravery to pause. And certainly the invitation I've just issued to take deep stock of what you do as an organization and a business and a brand requires a huge amount of bravery. So I wrote this in the book. You will need conviction to pause because you have to confront doubts and skepticism, your own as well as other people's. Pausing is uncomfortable and unpopular. It is likely you will be criticized explicitly or implicitly. The moral high ground belongs to those who get on with things, not those who delay. You will find plenty of reasons in your own mind why now is not the time. Expect all this and pause anyway. Thank you.